I was just trying to wait to speak so I didn't include what Walt was rambling about on the podcast. You can ramble enough later on. Okay, welcome to the Show and Tell Open Mic. Whoa, those whoa. Few of you who braved the zombie apocalypse that is the shopping season. Obviously we are fewer in numbers. Many of us have fallen prey to the elements or the ice zombies, one or the other. So I don't know if we're going to really do the 7-minute limit. I'm hoping maybe for a 10-minute limit. Don't tell Walt. Other than that, I don't know how many rules we have. Just be courteous. Try not to talk while someone else is performing. If you have to, you can go out back. It's not actually terrible out. So, unfortunately, we don't have a number one because everyone was chicken. Oh, yeah, I should be thanking, first before I start, I should be thanking all the members of Show and Tell Gallery, Melissa Silito, Joel Wedgman, Nathan Reynolds. David De Serrano is over in the corner, and he's not performing tonight. Don't ask him. Mary Slocum, who hosts Open Mic. Christine Himitsu-White, who runs the website. Wayne Flower, who helps out every once in a while. And me. And also, let's thank Chris, the barista, and tip him well. Whoa. And thank Three Friends Coffee House for having us. So, with that all said, let's go on to number two, Hob and Creech.
Hi. That door goes the wrong way. Every goddamn time I come to that door, I went next door and they have a different handle and it goes the same way, but it felt more right. Change your handle. I mean, come on. All right. So. To a different handle? That's new? Damn it. Yeah. There is. All right. So we got that settled. It's weird. That was it. That was really what I had right there. You know, it's like I was just gonna stop right there and be like, okay, we're good. We got that settled. I came over here just to hopefully come up with something to say. And I was trying all the way here, listening to shows, thinking about stuff, thinking about that damn door handle. I like the idea of socialism stuff. I like finding a way for us to get there. It is important to develop towards the society we want. We have to accept that we have to do this in steps and stages. And I thought of this maybe neat app that you have on your phone, because a lot of people just mount it right there on their dashboard or their window and they got their GPS. Fucking annoying shit, but car ride app all the time, and you start working for people who understand why you're late because you made a couple of detours, drop people off fairly close. And the idea is you got this app, just about everybody's got some sort of Wi-Fi or cell phone or whatever. Maybe it's an easy code, here I am, need a ride to here. And we build an app, Google Maps, GPS, all this stuff. You get dropped off at the gas station on the corner of Murray and 26, and you still need to get on over to the Sunset Station, but the guy, he can't quite make that route and try and keep on going. He's got three empty seats in his car. My car's full of shit because I like to live in it, but you could all help me clean it out, throw it in the trunk or whatever. I don't even care. And so, boom, I got my phone up there just to be part of this carpool app. And I'm driving somewhere, and I put it in. I say, this is where I'm going. I need to try and be there by here. And everybody along the way just be like, boom, 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 boom. I need to ride from here to here. And be like, okay, that's close enough. Boom, pick them up. Okay, I can drop you off here. Okay, now I'm here. I need another ride over to here. Next person passing by with an empty seat, just be like, hey, I'm gonna stop for a minute. And you get employers, you'll be like, hey, you're 10, 15 minutes late. We understand you were stopping on your carpool route. You're trying to get here, right? You don't go too far out of your way. You don't keep getting fucking sidetracked by every motherfucker who needs a goddamn ride. But you contribute your car, your empty seats, all the time. And this is in the steps to a more efficient car system, transport system, electric cars, little fucking something better than power, pedal power, because none of us want to fucking just pedal everywhere all the fucking time. I mean, we got groceries, we got heavy shit. It's raining outside, you're late for work. You need a fucking pickup. You need a ride, but we need better cars. But we're not there yet. We, you and me and I and everybody else in between have not made that a priority, a reality for ourselves yet. So we accept that and we invent some stupid little app everybody downloads for free. And you accept the fact that when you download shit for free, when you have robotic assembly lines, that you are consuming up free labor that somebody put hours of coding into and hours of work. You accept that and you say thank you for all your effort to help us all function better. So I'm got my own car, can afford the insurance, I'm trying to get somewhere, I can probably afford some detours, I'll pick you up. I don't even need gas money. I mean, I'm thinking, well, maybe I need like a little bit of gas money if it starts like fucking costing me and shit, but you start building towards the socialism that you want, that seems feasible, that seems rewarding. And you don't label it just with that anarchic socialism. Community, caring, wanting it to work, wanting us all to succeed to whatever fucking level you feel like fucking succeeding to. There is no bar. They're just, is whatever you're doing. Like, I get away with not doing all sorts of shit. And I'm happy with it. I heard a thing about people talking about how much house cleaning work women did in the 50s and men did in the 50s and how much they do now. And one guy's arguing, let's all move down to the lower end and just do less. Women do little less and we'll still be okay. And I'm a big supporter of germ spreading and stuff like that to build my immunity. And, you know, like, I don't fucking wash my hands nearly as much as I ought to, except for when I should, and then I try to. But, I mean, like, I'm reading this awesome book from this Japanese farmer back from the 50s and 60s. He was a government scientist. It's all about permaculture, and he learns how to grow rice and winter grain, rye and barley in his place properly. And it takes two people to run a large several acre farm, hand scything, maybe you get a bunch of people in for harvest. Either way, it's all about permaculture, which has to do with fractal farming, if nobody knows anything much about it, because it took me a year of attending permacultures to understand what the fuck that meant. It means that you set the stage for the things to happen naturally, the way they, you know they will. The fractal unfolds. You build food jungles. You never, in this book he talks about, you never, ever, ever, ever till the soil. You lay on top, you lay on top, you lay on top. You do not disrupt the spiders and the crickets and the mice and anything else that lives there, the weeds. You don't try to fucking destroy it. You coax it along. You provide the markers for the fractal to divide. And that's, in case anybody had no clue, that is what permaculture is about, is seeing the fractal divide and just doing our smallest, littlest input, not help. We are not superior beings on this planet, by the way. We just think we are. We have this concept that we are. I mean, if dolphins or some other creature, chimpanzees, decided that maybe they should be the smartest creature on this planet in that egotistical way, they could fucking go out and build a goddamn AK-47. That guy just died, by the way. Kalashnikov. And whatever, you know. There's this whole thing of, like, how us as humans think we're so smart. And you get involved. I work over at the Intel site, and I'm watching this woman tonight walk out of the fab, and she's older than me, and she's a little bit taller, and she's carrying all these wafers, and she's got something else, and she's, like, walking faster than me, and she's part of something bigger than herself. But so we're the people in the Manhattan Project. And we think we're so clever, and we have so much fun figuring shit out. We don't hold ourselves accountable for what it is we're creating. So hold yourself accountable for what it is you're creating every day, all the time. And it doesn't need to make you be an adult or a kid or anywhere in between. It just makes you be you. When you hold yourself accountable as a human in the fractal that is this earth, that may in fact be the only conscious as we are of other things, life forms, or planets supporting life, anything like ours, in the entire conceivable known universe, we may be the one in that many chance. Now, they say it's a big place and it's unlikely that we're alone, but it's just as likely that we are, and that we are that special, and that we should think of ourselves that special and take ourselves that special and make something special every day of your life. I want to quit my job. I want you to quit your job. I want you to go back to it immediately if it means something important, if it supports what you care about. First, I want you to quit. I want me to quit. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it today or tomorrow. But maybe the day after. See, that's how far I put it out, in that now exists all the time. And everything that ever has and everything that ever will exists only in the moment of the now as you perceive it. So I'm going to put it like three steps away from myself until I feel community build around me to catch me when I fall from grasping at my star. Trying to really do what I care about every day, every moment of now, instead of just sufficing, which I've resigned myself to intentionally. I want to be that little middleman just right in the middle that everybody else comes up to and can pass over for right now. It's nice. So, I don't know. I'm going to end. Thank you guys so much for listening to me, and hope you all have a good time.
Quit Intel. Our second performer of the evening is David Mahalan. They don't need opposable thumbs. They just put things together with their thumbs.
That's scary, man. Last time I was here, I took us over the mountains to the volcanic territory of Eastern Oregon, Northern California. Today, we're going to Willapa Bay, the Pacific Ocean, and a notion that is always with us, always available, something that's worth tapping into once in a while, perhaps. There's a great motto, kind of the motto of the state of Washington, which is surrounded by far more coastline because of the way the Puget Sound undulates in and around a great portion of the state. When the tide is out, the table is set. So for me, for the holidays, I decided that fuck Fukushima. I'm tired of thinking that my next period of lives, possibly lives beyond my own life, will be influenced by this massive tragedy and the devil's work itself, to be sure, TEPCO, General Electric, they've done it to us. However, we still are citizens of the planet, and we still have to learn to live with it, love it, enjoy it, and I'm going to give you a little food demo.
Some plastic utensils or anything?
No, I'm great. I'm coming for it. One of my favorite maritime phrases, really another piece of our lives. People may know that the people who do Dan and Louie's Oyster Bar also created the wonderful Wildwood Restaurant. And Corey Schreiber is a member of one of the Dan and Louie Oyster family. So I brought four exquisite medium-sized goose point oysters today. And I'm looking for four brave, hardy volunteers to each have an oyster on the half shell. I did not bring hot sauce. Many people believe that hot sauce is de rigueur for oysters.
Here it is. Just throw it in here.
Bring it on up. If somebody can provide me with some hot sauce, that would be awfully good. I think that actually lots of times it's really wise to just go with your basic lime. So I cut some nice lime segments here.
David, I love you.
Well, that's good, Walt.
You should have two volunteers then. Not me.
Here's a quote that I thought was quite good. This is from An Appetite for Passion by the author of Like Water for Chocolate. And she has offered us in her, as one of the opening recipes in her book, Lusty Oysters with Ginger and Lime. And the recipe ends with this wonderful quote, "Oysters are the most tender and delicate of all seafoods. They stay in bed all day and night. They never work or take any exercise, are stupendous drinkers, and wait for their meals to come to them." So tonight I've brought a meal to you. When I called Goose Point Oysters up, I used to actually handle their oysters here in Portland and took them around to maybe 20 restaurants, from very fancy high-end restaurants all the way to scuzzy little burrito bars where people, because they came from Mazatlan or something like that, wanted to have an oyster at the start of the day or at the end of the day. They can be handy both ways. And I'm going to offer one more phrase that I think that now sets the table, and we'll just dive here and I'll explain to you how to open an oyster. The people at Goose Point Oysters sold me this professional oyster shucking knife for $12. Without the right tool, you shouldn't be on the job.
You bloody your knuckles.
You can bloody your knuckles and you can bloody the oyster, and you don't want to do either one of those. So the key things that you need are some kind of a hand towel so that you don't gouge yourself as you're trying to pop open the oyster. But also, you're trying to treat it with the same kind of respect that it's given us. This little beauty is basically a work of art. This cost wholesale 62.5 cents, so it's not that expensive. And you can take this piece of living art, because this is still quite alive, and basically turn it into one of the most passionate and fabulously tasty foods on the planet. And I'll quickly explain how you do that. And what we're doing is another phrase that you should keep in your mind. This is one of the quintessential Northwest phrases. Come, let us royster with the oyster in the cooler days and moister. Let's try that all together again. Come on, let us royster with the oyster in the cooler days and moister. Those are words to live by. The oyster is never better than when it's gone through a warm season And then suddenly the waters get colder and colder. Willapa Bay is a magical place because it's a bay that is fed by 1,000 streams. So there's a lot of fresh water there, and it's constantly flushing then out to the Pacific. And it's a mix then of the salinity of the Pacific with this massive amount of very pure water coming off the Willapa Hills. So with an oyster, basically, there's a top and a bottom, and you're basically trying to insert your knife into a slot right here so that you can loosen what is known as the abductor muscle. Okay, so I'm going to dive in here now. You basically don't need to be as strong as you need to be a little bit persistent. You need to know that you're going to get it, and sometimes you have to keep adjusting your angle a little bit. Now that I'm on this massive stage, I can see that the tension is mounting.
How do you respectfully kill an oyster?
Well,
you shuck it.
And you shuck it by going in for not the kill as much as the opening. The oyster itself has been under the waters of Willapa Bay I'm going to try another one. This one is taking its little sweet time with me.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Has defeated you.
Yeah, not, it hasn't.
No.
It's not over. It just needs a. It's trying to tell me that its day has not. Its hour has not yet come. Okay. So this one slid in much more cleanly. So you take the knife in a short distance, and then you move it slightly to the side, and you're trying to loosen. If people are right here, and anybody's welcome to come up and take a little bit closer peek.
Bobby, do you want an oyster?
You can see that I'm loosening what is it basically the sea. The sea is inside the oyster shell.
Okay.
And now I pop it.
I appreciate you. Have you ever seen an oyster like eat?
Yeah. This shell goes open all the time, so they're constantly opening. So the inside of the oyster, now that it's available, feel free to come up and take a peek here.
Marcus, get one. Go ahead.
I only have four of these. These are really fresh out of the sea as of 2 days
Chris,
ago.
Get one. Chris,
you
better hurry. There's only four of them.
Okay. So, send back to me.
Well, they're
go ahead and take as much as you want of
you
the.
You can bloody your knuckles from these. David, proud of you.
Okay. Put it right here on this. No, this is for you. But the oyster goes right on here. You want your hot sauce? I'm going to keep this. You don't get that anymore. I've got it all. So I'm losing. Okay, so there's number one. It's a brave man, the first to take a taste of a slurpy oyster. And you're bringing the whole Pacific in with you. Can you taste that slightly light on the salinity? Okay.
Number Patrick, one. Did you get one? Patrick,
I'm not getting one.
Get one, Chris!
I thought you were going to bring gooey ducks out, though. Those are super good.
Chris. My brother.
Those things are like freaking clams with penises.
They're overachiever clams is what they are.
Yeah.
My brother one time showed up with 250 gooey ducks. And he called me from Ridgefield, Washington. Ridgefield is northern Clark County. He says, Dave, I'm coming down with some gooey ducks. I said, that sounds cool, Doug. He says, yeah, I got about just under 300. I said, and where are you calling from? I said, you're expecting me to help you sell these? Yeah. I'm in Ridgefield, Washington. So, okay, so this one is
there's
also.
Like tubes sticking out of them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you can find them and then you take the little clam tube.
He basically dove for them. And he had me down under the waters right across from Tacoma diving for these suckers. They were really.
I used to live on Barrowstone Island.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
When the tide would go out, we just ran out there and whatever we could.
You're going to need a light of the story.
Okay.
Chris, on the microphone, if you want.
I don't need no microphone. I'm allowed.
Okay.
David, put on the microphone.
I hate hot sauce, though.
Don't put any hot sauce on it. It's better just with a tiny bit of lime.
God, I love you, David.
Mine is good.
Merry Christmas, David. God, I love you.
Okay.
And get out your knuckle. We did Clinton Street quarterly. We're the Oregon Cultural Heritage Commission
that is the greatest human intellectual besides myself.
Yeah. Who can have it? Oh yeah, there's two more. I'll get this one open. The third one. It's gonna be easy. This will be easy peasy.
So once upon a time there was a primitive human being who said, you know what, I really want some snot and I've run out of my food. Yes, try one of these oysters.
These are really, they're fresh. After they've been out of the water for more days, they'd be easier to open. And they're still very definitely alive.
Other David, would you respond to this?
Yeah.
Other David, yeah.
Am I other David?
Well, he's a host.
Oh, okay.
Respond, David.
I'll tell you what, let me eat one and I'll respond to it that way.
Well, yeah, put the mic.
That's the best way to do it.
Come on. We have got dead air here. Dead air.
It's not a radio show, Walt. I can edit stuff out.
I'm with you. I love you.
In fact, I probably won't. I'll just leave what I just said on, but I'll boost the volume so all the time he's talking.
Well, no, I don't know.
I can tell you one thing, though. Once I get this podcast up, people will show up a lot more often.
Okay, now I'm going to see if I can wrestle this last oyster into... The thing I think that's fabulous about the oyster is that each oyster is more than almost any other creature that I know of on the planet.
Go ahead.
They are reflections of their environment. The taste of the sea, everybody that had a taste of one of these oysters, the sea is completely with us as you're eating an oyster. And if you open it correctly, you don't spell the lovely liqueur de las perlas. As we know,
the liqueur of the pearls.
Yeah, this one is really, really having a hard time.
He doesn't appreciate the time limit.
Yeah, this
God
one
damn,
is.
I love you, David.
Yeah. Okay, you're welcome to. I'm just going to have to work on this one a little bit longer, so you're going to get it. But I don't want to tie up any more time. Anyway, I just wanted to bring the briny news from the Pacific to Portland. I'm really glad that you were able to share a moment with the oysters.
Very excited that sacred year 2014 is almost upon us. Very excited. This is for David's and Walt's everywhere, a new poem. Strangeness wakes in the basement, ascends to find moon infecting white fog, tiptoes around puppy love's tyranny, anguish by anguish beholds the dying. They showed us the world in mirrors, grotesquing everything, especially that blindfolded suck-and-grope show they call love. We ushered Mozart far from the ball he dropped, Piano Concerto number 20 in D minor clearly needed jazzed up with percussion and clowns juggling on unicycles. She was haunted by every poem, so they were all ghost poems. She was turned on by every cowboy hat, so each was a catalyst for orgasm. God's emoticons, clearly the colon capital P tongue wag at humanity, and heaven turns out to be a bank insisting on initial deposits we can't make. Love was obviously not enough for Adam and Eve. They needed brains and a challenge. That's what the fruit was for. That gloomy shadow at the microphone represents the best I could do with my gift, communing with other gloomy shadows, closest I've come to finding home. They're lacing our oatmeal with sedatives. A dream revealed to me their secret essay, Oatmeal and the End of Disruptive Individualism. I eat cream of wheat now. We tend to do best what we're interested in, because we tend to practice those things most. That's why the crazy are adept at both art and oral sex. Watching the geese eat shit meditation, I refuse the objective world in which things are mostly space and the new homo economic DNA shaped like dollar signs. Eat and drink what you want. If you think, you're gonna feel bad in the morning anyway. Cosmic animals need more than hospice music and the apotheosis of dolphins ushered through hoops for a peek and a whiff at the high-octane seaweed forever denied them. We expect our greatest plasma donation poets to take the needle with heroic stoicism and to escape the bewitchment of friction. I expect the moon and stars of them. I guess I'm hoping that absurdity opens a portal to God so that my hands may chill cold some answers from that original white bitch who's always pinching our ecstasy off. Taking these 16 quatrains of strangeness as courage flagged in the face of anti-mind power, kill me, I won't serve your kingdom. This daughter of Orion with bleeding mind opens her eyes to a non-world that never glittered. I choose to love her. Happy New Year, everybody.
It's raining angst and erections. All the young girls, tongues out, waiting for their snowflakes. They think they're dirty when they touch themselves. They know it's wrong. Tears falling, realizations covering the night sky fully. No more room for sunshine.
Well done.
Thank you. Synthetic carpet. Synthetic laughter. No direction, but a synthetic suggestion. Smile for the camera, read from the screen, prepare for the bad weather, nothing to reflect on. An anxious house of mirrors. The exit is selfish, the exit is selfish, the exit is selfish. Look around you, keep searching, don't get too close, do it for them. Thank you, and I'm excited for the oyster.
All right, so I'm cheating. I'm just going to go next. You know, Walt, I was just going to say no.
Podcast.
But you go to showandtellgallery.org.
Okay.
And then there's the first page is, I mean, it's all the most recent events, like today's open mic would be at the top. Last week would be right beneath it. And then it goes on. And then the event you want to hear, you go to it and they'll say, listen to it. There's a little dial thing you click on and it'll start playing it. And you can also download it, which Mike G has done a lot of, actually. But yeah, showandtellgallery.org. All right, so I apologize for being depressing.
You're not excited about the miracle year 2014?
No. It isn't a wonderful life, no. It isn't a wonderful life, showing simultaneously on 15 separate cable channels as Anthony Scotti continuously clicks the remote in search of a college bowl game at 11 in the morning as he downs another Heineken after he swore to end his binge on this, the seventh day since being suspended from high school for allowing his work boots to attempt to separate Mooch Ritigliano from his testicles because Mooch didn't hand over his half of the cash he found with Kim Chu, Anthony's best friend in the world, which to them meant only Nassau County, Long Island. They found the cash in a tree stump within the Forbidden Forest where only drug dealers, dirtbags, and anyone else with a social life at Farmingdale High School hung out at, only to have Felix the accountant return for his stash, call the cops, and press charges in the hopes of getting his crack money back. An immigrant from Korea where adherence to such principles translatable into an American Christian culture as honor thy mother and father and thou shalt not steal are strictly obeyed under penalty of death, Kim Chu gladly forked over his portion of the sourdough. But Mooch, having recently read the Finders Keepers, Losers Weepers section of Ayn Rand's The Virtuous Selfishness, decided to stay in a Farmingdale jail cell to be worth the $30 he already spent on a Ziploc freezer bag of pot he hid when he heard the police wailing up Carmen's Road, the usual approach to bus deals and school grounds. Mooch changed his mind in the morning after the deputy unlocked the cell door to find Kim's body hanging by his taekwondo brown belt from the fluorescent lamp in the ceiling, a suicide who died in love with the shame in his heart.
I told you it was depressing.
That's holiday material.
Yeah, it is. Holidays are depressing. This one's not. Thank God. Oh, wait, you know what? I'll do...
What about your life?
What about my life?
Tell me about your life for me.
No, thank you. well, yeah. I am the god of snow. You wanted to hear about my life? I am the god of snow. Your chains lie useless against me. Rain City shall fall behind schedule under my light load. Watch 4x4s thrown asunder by my wheel fraying power. Behind you, before you, everywhere you drive, fall the silent flakes of death. My spirit winters Portland. No one shall work. One cubic centimeter in victory. This stalled economy is mine. Whoa. Begins at home. All right, this fits the shopping season. The problem of a labyrinth without a minotaur, aka Malthus, was right. Customers wander to Powell's City of Books daily, yet few wander out. No monster walks the bookstore's halls. Intrepid travelers will enter with ropes strung to their belts, yet within mere hours the line will go slack. These customers can be viewed through street front windows. Obviously, the customer base, while stuck inside the store, shows no signs of decreasing. Portland officials warn that this trend cannot continue without an internal famine. The World Cup coffee room will simply run out. Man cannot live on vegan scones alone. In order to avert this possible catastrophe, Powell's Books opened an online store to slow down the rush of people past its doors into the labyrinth. Still, city officials believe it is only a matter of time before a minotaur will have to be built to keep down the numbers within the store. Surely, death by being torn apart alive is preferable to slow starvation and sickness inevitable under the current grazing numbers. Oh, let's be gross.
Talk about your life.
This is about my life. The bathroom white.
Oh.
Why, have you had an experience with the bathroom white?
Yeah, I have. But...
Oh, is that so?
I was a janitor, but...
Sitting on the porcelain seat, you'd swear you felt a tickle, that the waters below could not remain calm, and you will not blame yourself for that. As a child, you would flush and then run out the door at night, never once looking back, as if to turn and face your fears behind you would immobilize your body into stone. Yet you ran out of the bathroom once the sounds began, as if to outrun an overstretching arm reaching out to hold you back. Now, as an adult, you have outgrown such silly fears. Until now, when you feel its damp hand clamp down upon the most vulnerable part of your body. Only when you become the latest victim of the bathroom white do you realize your childhood fears were so well founded. So, yeah, Walt, you've dealt with the bathroom white? Yeah, I know, but did you have to fight the bathroom right reaching out from under the toilet?
Well,
didn't you get that? No? Okay,
no,
never mind.
David, they squirt water up in Europe. They have a bidet.
So they have faux bathroom whites in Europe, is what you're telling me? I'm just going to let you keep laughing.
We could go longer about bathroom stuff, but I don't think we should.
No.
I don't think we should.
All right, I'm just doing one more. This is going to fit my cold.
Patrick, why did you become who you are? What are you...
Why did you become who you are, Walt? There doesn't have to be context. Does everyone else believe I am not be giving you context, that you don't know where I'm coming from in any of my pieces?
Thank you.
All right, yeah. So context. Context will spoil this poem. I'm not going to tell you the context in this poem.
Let's be real here.
That's another thing that drives me nuts. I'm talking to a suburban surrealist. Don't tell me to get real. Book suction.
Give us context.
All right, I'll give you the context after I read it.
Okay.
So I can spoil the poem.
Context. Book suction. I hug her on the temple veins. And in her light, filling the pages, paper tendrils hook the flesh. Yet another victim at Boho Cafe. No one gets up to help him. My brothers can do this.
Jane Austen claims another for influence. So context. Oh, I wrote that in a cafe watching other people read. I was reading Jane Austen, realizing she's actually a great author. So I wrote this little like alien thing, and then, you know, yeah, at the end is a punchline. Yeah, it's Jane Austen is that blah, blah, blah. You know? You know, because books, I mean, it used to be books were evil things. You know, nowadays it's like we hate, you know, the internet or, you know, Beyonce or, we don't. I don't hate Beyonce at all. But like, or, you know, we don't, you know, you hate like the media around you. Well, books are part of the media. They were the beginning of it. You know, for a long period of time, people didn't actually have books. And the world was very much poorer for their non-existence. My rant's done.
Oh, no, you're not done.
I'm not done. All right, fine. One more. One more because Walt decided I need a poem that does not have context.
No context. Wait, he's yes.
part of it. I brought him on Kabu. I think he's funny.
Yeah, next week I'm going to have
surrealist.
Yeah, next week we're actually going to have a radio play written by Bill Tremblay. It's going to be on 10 to 11. The start of it, it's like 2 hours long, so we're breaking it up.
2 hours?
Yes,
too
hours. Why? It has context.
Too long.
Anyway, I'll tell you about that next week, too. But actually, no, wait, that's not next week. That's like 3 weeks from now. Excuse me. Sorry. I don't know what I'm going on. All right. Poem without context, and I'm done. Got to get off the stage. Wear money. Shape-shifting dollar bills, wings melting onto them. Watch them fly like Icarai into the sunny air, only to burn to a crispy brown. Spending without control, watch the wear money crawl down a hole or morph into a useless shawl. Open your wallet to the bill's cries. Let me go! Let me go! Let me go! It all sounds like theft, Atlas holding up the world without any heft. Unseen currency transforms overnight into furniture and food without a fight. For its next trick, watch it all disappear.
Whoa.
Simon's still outside?
Where the hell is he?
Well, then Walter next.
Oh. Okay. Did he run away? Did he get scared or what? I don't know.
Yeah, he didn't like my monster voice.
You know what? Actually, because we're a small group here. Here my glasses. I have my glasses. I don't need my glasses. Well, I probably do. Listen. That person is evolved. You know, humans evolve. I'm going to do this just like evolution. Where is Simon? Let's find Simon. He's not out there. Did he run away?
I don't know. He's probably.
Well, you know. Why don't we? Okay, I have my glasses. Okay, but you know, I really want to bring this at a. We're in the dark time of the year, and it's coming back the light. But we're in a dark society. I can't go around here. You know what? This kind of
space is what Jesus and the early Christians and they perverted Christianity because they were really talking about the Spirit. The Spirit is everywhere. And you know, and it's a communal Spirit. You know, it's not a big bunch of people here tonight, but you know, all of you are listening to each other. You're listening to each other, and you can't do this necessarily in fascist, technological, corporate America today. And I find it really sad. David Melon knows this very much. The context is that you're fucked. Okay. And I had a few preliminary remarks that I'll keep it
simple, but...
But you know what? Your personal vitality and the beauty of your souls are here tonight. This is like a little early Christian context. Okay, come on, well, stay on top of it, well, don't lose it. You know, and actually, I want to talk about something else here. You know, I don't want to use my ego, but We're all spiritual people like Jesus. We have our, and there's two tracks to reality and materialism. Can I do this? I don't have my glasses on. Well, okay. I'll say this. There's a spiritual warfare going on the planet. Technology is overwhelming all of spirit. Your voice is your spirit. It's metaphysical. Now, actually, when I get drunk and I drink, I admit that. I don't have a problem with it. Do you have a problem with it? No, I'm going to read a poem. I'm going to finish this very powerfully. But, you know, I actually want to tell you something. And, you know, we're in the solstice, the dark time. What I want to say is that Milo and I are older guys. I'm 72. I don't know his age, but the point is, we have watched this society evolve into bad corporate, bad. It's Orwellian, and I want to protect you. Okay, I don't know if I can. You are trapped in a metaphysical zone, and I'm not convinced we can stop them until they destroy it. They're destroying your planet Earth. So now I don't want to be negative. I think our nature, whatever brought us, the divine intelligence that brought it into the universe, we are beings of light, but we have to protect ourselves. I know this sounds a little insane. We're in a spiritual warfare with these, whatever. I don't know what they are. You're in a spiritual, I'm talking like Ken Kesey. I'm talking at the acid level. Don't worry about it. I'm going to read my poem and I'll get off the stage. You, when I am not psychotic at all. In fact, I am bored with how much knowledge I have. But so anyway, I wrote this a while back. What I want to warn you about, you save your natural being, your personal divine soul. Everyone in this room has a divine spark of God, okay? Okay. God. Divine intelligence. Is that enough? Okay, I'll pause. Okay? Is that enough? I don't want you to forget this. It's not a joke. The world is changing so dramatically since, let me do one more sentence about that. When the virtual reality is not reality, we're at a point in planetary cosmic history on the planet, and we have to save the planet. I want you to use your earthly spiritual souls to save the planet. No, that sounds like a lecture. It is. Fine. So I'm going to end with this. Okay. I wrote this many years ago. Zombies. God damn it. Where are my glasses? It doesn't matter. I think I can do it. No. Are they on the ground? Thank you, darling. Darling, bless you. We're in the dark time. We can come back to light, but I don't know. Okay, here we go. I wrote this in 1970. I love being old. I love being old. Be old and beautiful. Zombies awake. Address to the citizens of Portland. That's funny. Willamette Week should print this, but they won't. But no. His hand moved like a mechanical jabbing jerkily in the damp air as in a Japanese horror movie made by Walt Disney. Back from the grave land, the man walked toward me, dreaming of a pair of pliers, the pliers twisting two pieces of wire together, the circuit complete. Shorting and burning through the left hemisphere, which controls the right hand, the hand stops. The brains are numb. The people are asleep. They shall never wake up, but in doing so, realize dying. Water tastes of oil, air of ozone. I run away as the plier's hand jabs at my face. Touch me. Am I real? Feel me, do I keel over, controlled, realize when dying, I have never been awake. The parking meter staggers trying to change me into a coin. I am a cosmic coin jingling in a bank machine. Mr. Coin jangles. Okay. Who wants to be alone? Everyone. I run back to my apartment and hide behind a locked door. How can I get away from the rest of you? I don't feel that way, but every mad, crazy, bad one, I don't know. Only beyond a locked door is there Satori, wisdom, lack of fear, tenderness. The list of positive human goals is endless and hopeless in this taken over world. Who is in control? I don't know. Who has wired us? I don't know. Who has werewolved us? I don't know. I don't care. Release me. Zombie, awake from your frozen dream. Pull out the wires, pinch the tubes, but escape. I don't care. I have been to too many movies. When is the movie over? When is the movie over? I'm talking about real life right now, and I'm not joking. When is the movie over? In my dreams, I see hemorrhaging heads of family and friends, blood pouring down through matted hair like ketchup you put on a hamburger. When is the virtual reality over?
So Simon went missing.
He's outside.
He's outside?
Well, I yelled it. Look in here. Yeah,
well, you go. I'll stall for time.
Stall for time. Talk about your life.
Well, I was going to say that, like, that was an interesting poem. You said he was published in 1970, but you mentioned virtual reality at the end. He's written plenty of since, but... I don't know. I was like influenced by Night of the Living Dead, and then like you mentioned ice in it. So, I mean, do you agree with me that Game of Thrones ripped you off from that poem?
Who?
Game of Thrones.
Fuck no, I don't know these people. I read that in 1970.
Yeah, exactly. So George R.R. Martin came up with the ice zombies in his Game of Thrones series. So. So,
I just want to alert you to that.
Is Simon actually coming in?
Or? He's not here.
I don't think he is.
That's not all Simon.
David, do you want? I was going to ask if anyone else wants to read. Is it anyone else who
want to? Do you want to
You'd like to perform? So, David, you're going to be next. And then you'll be after David.
Okay, I like the whole idea of something that Walt just said, and my mind's going on it. And he said something along the lines of, I'm not a psychopath. I'm bored with the ideas I have, the knowledge I have in my head. And I like the concept sort of out of context. I'm not a psychopath, I'm bored. As though if you're a psychopath, you can't be bored. And what I like about that is you really have no excuse to be bored if you are a psychopath. Because the boundaries with which you have to exist are so much broader that if you are bored with life, then you're just not trying. Or the boundaries of life are actually much more finite than we imagined. That you could be a psychopath with no moral boundaries and get bored still. And I like to think that that's not the case. I want to think that if I were a psychopath, I would rather disembowel you than be bored. You know, I could always like, well, I've got nothing better to do. Let me kill somebody. I've got nothing better to do. Psychotic, well, is there much of a difference between a psychotic and a psychopath? Okay, well, a psychotic, okay. Sociopath. Well, sociopaths and psychopaths are kind of the same thing, though.
You're distorting what I said. The planet is dying. You're all dead.
You're right. I took your environmental cause and used it to justify the disemboweling of strangers.
I'll let you go. Go ahead.
Please.
I thought sadism comes from being bored.
Well, sadism comes from being bored, but once you accept, allow yourself to cross the line of becoming a sadist, there's no reason to be bored of that anymore. Well, yeah, and that's where then disemboweling and vivisection and so on comes into play. Really?
And he gave her an extended ride from Tacoma area to Evergreen College. He was going down to Chicago College. And he doesn't kill her.
I hope not.
He says, I never, ever, looking straight in her face as he's kind of forcing her out of the car, I never, ever want to know that you hitchhike again. Don't do it. Don't tempt me. You know, he actually, in a sense, is an uber moralist. Essentially, I will make the decisions about who will live and who will
Well, you know, I actually know somebody who has a first cousin that's a diagnosed sociopath. And she had a very close relationship with him growing up. And he actually put it this way. I'm paraphrasing what she told me that he said, but I found it to be really insightful. He said that, you know, people are things, and you, he said to her, you are my toy. Only I get to break my toys. You know, so like there's a sort of a level of protectiveness over another person. You can sort of value another person, but it's only as though you value your best Legos. You know, there's like a moral code, but it's, and in fact, if anything, you could almost say that those kind of moral codes are the most honorable because they're usually much more hard-lined. You know, they're... Oh, oh, yeah. Yeah.
You are programmed by the military-industrial complex.
Well, I certainly am.
It's stupid.
Well, that was that person's code. That doesn't mean another sociopath would have another code.
Well, of course not. But what I'm saying is that when we take the concept of sociopath or psychopath or psychotic, whatever, we have a very broad definition of what that means. And we sort of think it's very much sort of without moral boundary. And yet that's actually not it. It's actually a very rigid moral boundary, but it's, we could say, a very skewed moral boundary. But it is still a very, I mean, there's sort of this very cut and dried, this is what I will do, this is what I will not do, and here's why I won't. And it's all very well thought out. I didn't really have anything to say. I love the concept, and I'm sorry, I misunderstood. I thought he said psychopath, but it was psychotic. But
sociopath.
Well, you said psychotic. I thought you said psychopath, and now you're saying you meant sociopath. But I love the concept of a bored psychopath, and that's sort of where my mind was going on. But one more little aside.
Whoa, whoa, whoa,
Is this a Perry Mason episode?
You are programmed by the military. You're still learning to deal with it. Why don't you be real here?
You have your time on the microphone.
What's the meaning? Walt, as the host, I am a suburban surrealist.
We're no reality whatsoever.
Well, I want to know what I'm supposed to confess to. I mean, I only killed 17 children. That's like, that's a pittance compared to most military people, so.
You want me to cut that off the podcast?
Well, it was part of my military duty, so I stand by it with pride. And I have ribbon. No, I don't have any. I don't know. It's just ridiculous. No, it's, but no, I just, sorry. I thought the concept of a bored psychopath was funny to me. But here's what I do want to talk about really fast. I've noticed some of this thing I've seen on TV. There's actually like on a Learning Channel or a Discovery Channel or something, there's one of those reality shows, and it's called Rehab Addict. And I was thinking, you know, that's kind of the most extreme you could be for an addiction. It's like, where do you go for that? I mean, either you get help or you don't get help, but if you're getting help, you're actually enabling your own addiction, so there's really kind of nowhere to go with that. But I was just thinking about that, like everything needs to be more and more extreme on television, and now we have Rehab Addict. I'm addicted to rehab. But I don't know, it's just ridiculous. So, is there anybody after me?
Yes.
Okay, who's after me? Simon? Somebody?
No, Simon's the spirit.
Oh.
Simon,
okay. Whomever is next.
I think it's Walt that was talking about the divine spark. Yeah, that's his name?
Thank you.
Oh, Walt. I wrote this poem like a few years ago. I was getting kind of into mysticism and Buddhism and all that other stuff. And it's just called Meditations on the Soul. What you are, you have always been, a universe beyond the layer of your skin. What you are has always been around. It has been around before time. What you are was never born. What you are will never die. What you are has always been around. And it'll be around when the universe implodes, swallows itself whole, goes back into the great womb of Mother Tao. What you are simply just is. Can I read you guys this one? It's a work in progress. It's a little... I haven't read this before, so I just want to try it out. It's kind of like my first attempt at like sketch comedy.
Oh.
So. We have plenty of comics.
Yeah.
Oh, here's one. It's kind of creepy. I love her eyes, but she has no face, which is kind of creepy. I mean, they're just eyes hovering in space. What this is about, it's just, I'm trying to work on dialogue and stuff because I find conversations between two people trying to write it down a little bit hard. So this is just a very left-wing progressive talking to a very right-wing Tea Party guy. So, liberal. I don't support the war we're in with the current country we're at war in because it's obvious. Profits and resources over oil, a regime change of a puppet dictator over the democratic elections of a free people. We have no right to be there. We should be taking care of our own people in this country and not by being the policeman of the world. So why in the hell do you support this war? Conservative. Because of liberty and freedom. Liberal. So what is this liberty and freedom? Well, you know, liberty and freedom. Liberal. Can you elaborate? Conservative. If we don't bomb the country that we are currently at war with, then the terrorists win. We need to Americanize these savages and replace their chaos with our democracy and free market capitalism. We are fighting this war because of tyranny. Liberal. Tyranny from what? Conservative. Well, you know, liberty and freedom. Conservative. Take Obamacare, for example, the perfect model of socialized medicine. It takes away our liberty and freedom by making all the poor and lazy people who are on food stamps and don't want to work and to have affordable health care. Liberal. Let me guess, because of liberal and freedom? Conservative. That's the ticket. Now you're sounding like a true patriot. So that was my attempt at dialogue. Thank you.
Anyone else want to perform tonight? No? All right, so I guess that's it tonight. Hopefully I'll get this on the podcast pretty soon. I'm starting to get better at putting them up there. I have about four I'm going to post tomorrow, which is good. This was way behind. And you can find it on showandtellgallery.org. Next week, we will not have, next Monday, we won't have a earlier feature event, but we will be starting the open mic at the same time. Hopefully, you might not, I don't know. Tell your friends. Hopefully we'll have more people here. But yeah, hope to see you here next week. And please have a good happy holiday and be safe. And we'll see you next week. Thanks.